Coming up on KUCB News, three observers face felony charges for shooting guns in the valley, and the Iditarod starts this weekend. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Thursday, February 28th, 2019. Three fisheries observers are facing felony charges for shooting guns in a residential area of the Unalaska Valley in late January. Police say they arrested Jacob Silver, Jason Swan, and Brian Tannenberger after several Unalaska residents reported hearing gunshots around 3 o'clock in the morning near the intersection of East Broadway Avenue and Stewart Road. No one was injured, but one caller told police she heard at least 10 shots and was so terrified that she retreated with her husband and her daughter to a room at the back of their house. Responding officers found the three men exhibiting symptoms of inebriation, and Tannenberger told the officers the trio had been drinking earlier that night at the Norwegian Rat Saloon. Tannenberger also told police that he decided to take Swan shooting after Swan said he had never fired a gun before. Tannenberger and Silver admitted to the police that they had fired the guns, but when asked, Swan said he, quote, had never fired a firearm in his life. Now out on bond, all three men have been charged with weapons misconduct, criminal mischief, reckless endangerment, and disorderly conduct. They're scheduled to appear in Unalaska District Court on March 6th. The city has replaced a road sign that was riddled by bullets in the incident. Officials estimate the new yield sign at Stewart and Holly Lane cost about $1,000. The U.S. Coast Guard medevaced two mariners this week from fishing vessels near Cold Bay. On Monday, officials say the FV Verdal was 70 miles north of the community when a crew member reported suffering from chest pains. The Coast Guard cutter Midget launched a Dolphin helicopter crew to medevac the man from the vessel and take him to Cold Bay for treatment. Then on Tuesday, the same helicopter crew rescued a FV Ocean Peace crew member who is displaying symptoms of appendicitis. The vessel was 115 miles north of Cold Bay at the time, and the man was taken there before he was transported to Anchorage. That Tuesday medevac marked the third in 8 days for Bering Sea fishermen following the rescue of an injured FV Carrie Marie crewman last Monday. Tomorrow is the last day on the job for Unalaska's finance director. Clay Darnell spoke with KUCB's Laura Craigle about why he resigned last month.
Darnell has spent about a year and a half as head of Unalaska's finance department. Now he says he's leaving to take a new job back in his home state.
I have accepted a position in Oklahoma as the controller of the Muscogee Creek Nation.
Darnell declined to answer questions about why he started looking for new opportunities. He says he'll do the same kind of financial work for the Muscogee tribe as he currently does for the city of Unalaska. Before he leaves, Darnell is focused on finalizing the city's budget proposal for fiscal year 2020.
The city was in good shape financially when I came, and they are also in good shape as I leave.
Darnell says he's grateful for his time in Unalaska and has a long list of people to thank.
How long do I have?
Take your time. Tell me.
Okay, I want to thank the community of Unalaska because they were so welcoming when I came, and also want to thank the finance staff. It's a group of dedicated, hardworking individuals that I work with every day, and I'm really going to miss them. The director group has been great to work with, and also I appreciated the professional and courteous treatment I got when I was before the city council members.
When Darnell submitted his letter of resignation on January 28th, he became the second city department director to resign over the course of 4 days. Jennifer Shockley had previously resigned as acting police chief. City manager Thomas E. Thomas has not responded to KUCB's request for comment on the staffing changes underway at City Hall. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Craigle.
Unalaska Community Broadcasting has covered local news for the past 20 years, and to mark the anniversary, KUCB is spending every Thursday of 2019 looking back at our former reporters and sharing some of their stories. This month, we're focusing on Charles Homans. He filed this report on Filipino pop stars visiting Unalaska in April 2007.
Pop stars from the Philippines often visit America to play concerts in cities like Los Angeles, Las Vegas, even Los Anchorage. But until last month, no one had made it quite as far as the Aleutian island of Unalaska, where Filipinos make up more than 20% of the population. So a local entrepreneur named Rose Hook decided she was going to change that. From Dutch Harbor, Charles Homans tells us more.
That one is pops.
Rose Hook has a poster for a movie called Zsa Zsa Zaterna on the wall of her convenience store in Unalaska, where she sells phone cards, money transfers, and Filipino foods to Unalaska's immigrant community.
In fact, I already sold out all the cities of this Zsa Zsa Zaterna.
Zsa Zsa Zaterna was the seventh highest grossing movie in the Philippines last December. It's a musical science fiction comedy. Think of a combination of Moulin Rouge and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and you're pretty close. One of the stars of Zsa Zsa Zaterna is an actress and singer named Pops Fernandez.
Mighty female warrior, ako si Queen Feminist War Stellar Baru.
Pops is in the middle of a North American tour with Ku Ledesma, a singer who's sort of like the Filipina Madonna. Somehow, Rose Hook has convinced Ku and Pops to play a show in Unalaska, a remote island community a fraction of the size of the places they're used to playing. It's Monday afternoon, 6 days before the concert, and Rose is nervous. She's fronting the money, a lot of money, to pay the performers. She's gambling that she can sell enough tickets in the Filipino community to at least break even on the deal. But to cover her expenses, she has to sell those tickets at $100 apiece, and so far, she hasn't found many takers. On Thursday afternoon, I'm standing with Rose in the Unalaska airport. She squeezes my hand to show me that her palms are sweating. This whole thing is stressing her out. Meanwhile, about 30 fans have gathered as the small airplane carrying the performers hits the runway. The first passenger off the plane is one of the tour's supporting acts, a flamboyant cross-dressing comedian named Chocolate. The fans recognize him instantly. Standing on the tarmac, Chocolate looks around him like someone who's just landed on the moon. A few minutes later, I ask him what he makes of all this.
What's your first impression of Unalaska?
Very cold. Well, no, just when I saw the snow there, I ready myself. It's to be very cold. It will be very, very cold.
This isn't the last shock the performers will experience. Instead of the huge venues they're used to playing back in Manila, they'll be taking the stage in a high school gym. Instead of limousines, they'll be shuttled around town in SUVs belonging to members of the local Filipino community organization.
First, they were scared, of course, because they don't know what they're going to get into.
And Gina Goh, the promoter for Ku and Pop's American tour, is regarding all of this with some amusement. She says she didn't fill the divas in on all the details before they got on the plane.
To be honest with you, I didn't tell them anything. I just want them to experience something different. And this is it. This is it, the chartboard.
But Gina has her own problems. The biggest of them is finding a stage. On Friday, she and the performers visit the high school gym where they're going to play on Sunday. The stage is a small wooden platform, the kind that's used for high school graduations.
So you don't have any more of this?
We don't, no, that's it.
But we're doing the stage.
While Gina and the high school principal try to figure out how all of this is going to work, I ask Ku what she thinks of the venue. She seems to be taking it in stride.
I have sang when I was beginning in a cockpit. So this definitely smells better than a cockpit. It's good, you know. Any place is good for us. As long as there are people who appreciate our music, that's good for us.
Ku and Pops do have a lot of fans in Unalaska, but only a couple hundred of them have bought tickets so far. That's why Gina is taking them over to the Westward Seafoods processing plant later this evening. The plant's workforce is heavily Filipino. Most employees would have to pull a full 12-hour shift to afford a ticket to the concert, but this show is a big deal, and Rose and Gina are counting on the processors to fill many of the seats. The performers show up at the Westward Galley around dinner time to sign autographs, pose for pictures, and promote the concert. By now, Rose has cut the price of admission in half to $50. The scene bears an odd resemblance to a USO show. It's like the inverse of Bob Hope touching down in the South Pacific during World War II. As a mob of fans swarms around the celebrities, Westward employee Sherry Hayes snaps pictures with a pink camera phone.
We never have chance at all, and this is the first time. You know, that's why everybody got so excited.
Thank you. See you Sunday. Thank you.
The Filipino community is excited.
Agnes Trinidad has bought pricey VIP tickets for Sunday's concert. She says that when she was growing up in Manila, Pops Fernandez was her favorite actress. As the day of the show approaches, she can barely contain herself.
I will try to keep my my composure and my excitement. So let's see. But once she gets there and everybody is kind of like yelling and, you know, let's see.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, two divas of the movies, Kuku Ledesma and Pops Fernandez.
On Sunday night, when Koo and Pops finally take the stage, Rose Hook is standing in the back of the gym. She squeezes my hand again to show me that she's not sweating anymore. She hasn't broken even on the concert, not by a long shot, but for the next 2 hours, that doesn't seem to matter. She's made local history, and when Koo and Pops invite her on stage for the last song of the night, she's grinning from ear to ear.
Thank you for inviting us here. Rose Hook, thank you for bringing us here.
In Unalaska, I'm Charles Homans.
That was Charles Homans, the third reporter for Unalaska Community Broadcasting. You can also check out Homans' current work in the New York Times Magazine. Join us next Thursday, where we'll introduce the station's fourth reporter, Ann Hillman, as part of our year-long series celebrating the 20th anniversary of UCB's newsroom. The Iditarod may be an iconic sled race, but it isn't what it used to be. Following yesterday's press briefing, KYUK's Johanna Urich reports that a smaller field of mushers will face less ice on the Bering Sea as they head to Nome.
There are only 52 mushers signed up to race their dogs to Nome Saturday. That's a far cry from the 80 teams that staged in Anchorage at the beginning of the millennium. In fact, you have to go back to the 80s to see this few teams at the start line. Five of the teams leaving Anchorage and then Willow this weekend are from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, and before they even start, they know they're facing diverse trail conditions. Snow is deep at the beginning of the trail at the restart in Willow and into the Alaska Range, but the snow cover in the remote area around the old ghost town of Iditarod is scant. That's usually a place where mushers can count on a lot of snow under their sleds, but not this year. In the past, this remote area has been a deciding point in the race, at which leading mushers have either dashed ahead or bogged down. Some have even gotten lost. The dash across Norton Sound is also off the list for this race. The ice isn't thick enough. Teams can expect to run close to shore and onshore in places during much of that section of the Iditarod Trail. That's it. The teams will be facing deep snow, scant snow, and little ice as they head north. And that's just what it looks like as they begin. During the 9 days to 2 weeks of their run to Nome, anything can happen. It always has. For KYUK, this is Johanna Urich.
Teams will find out their starting positions tonight at the Iditarod's Mushers Banquet. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.